C2PR. Number 20A.
Today with a prayer of life, and I just recapitulate quickly what this prayer of life wants to show us. We have the main tone epitome on life, which says the prayer of an understanding, living devotion to the divine. So you can hear at once. Now, it is all about an understanding devotion, a living devotion. We get the depth of life here, that the prayer must be very deep felt, and that devotion must be accompanied, again, with the unselfed love, with that willingness to sacrifice the mortal, see? And that brings us into unity with the all-renewing life. It is actually the prayer which shows on which basis do we have the renewing of life, which implies also the healing, how to get results from prayer, the true results from prayer. Again, perhaps we can remind ourselves here again of what we should do actually in every main tone epitome, that this epitome is actually just a variation of the whole epitome which we had for the whole of prayer, remember? And the whole of prayer, always we said, has to do with a spiritual understanding of God, an unselfed love. Therefore, each main subject of prayer would have to bring out, from the point of view of each synonymous term, that spiritual understanding of God, which here is brought out, that spiritual understanding of God is a living understanding, devotion to the divine. So a spiritual understanding from the point of view of life is that deep felt understanding, a deep felt devotion. It's not just a spiritual understanding that is superficial, that is just wordy, but a deep felt. Then we had in the main tone, or in the tone of the whole epitome of prayer, next to the spiritual understanding, the unselfed love. Well, from the point of view of life here, what is that unselfed love where we lay down the mortal? So very much here is brought out that we have to be willing to sacrifice the mortal sense of thing. And this brings us into unity with life, life that renews. So can you see that this epitome is just a variation of the epitome for the whole chapter on prayer? And so we really feel it's always the same melody that is played all through the chapter on prayer. There is a definite melody, but each prayer is a variation of that melody. Just as you have it in music, you have melody. I always talk about music, though I have the faintest knowledge of music. But still, that's how it impresses me. You have a melody, and then it begins to variate every time in a different way. See, so we hear really the whole symphony of prayer by just first catching the main melody of prayer. That we have said that prayer is a spiritual understanding of God, which through unselfed love brings us into unity with God, naturally with the whole perfect nature of God. So that's the main melody that runs right through that piece of music. And as we listen to it, we hear first that fundamental melody, may perhaps be introduced for the first time right at the beginning of a piece of music. And then later on it begins and shows that melody always in a different way, in a variation. That's how we should read the textbook. Textbook is really that wonderful symphony of heaven that speaks the language of spirit. The music is the language of spirit. They are not musical tones. They are tones of divinity. And then he shows the hues of divinity by just varying the tone of divinity into the hues of divinity through varying through the seven or through the four. So we can ask here in this fifth subject now, wherein lies then this living devotion to the divine? What is then that living devotion? We hear the tone of life, the love for God. And so she begins to show, in a very general way first, the fundamental law that she will explain right through every subtone in prayer, namely that cause determines effect, that the effect is never something else but the cause. Therefore, that great first sentence that really is, so to say, a title of the whole fifth chapter, which says, petitions bring to mortals only the results of mortals' own faith. In a religious prayer, we don't believe in that. In a religious prayer, we say, I have some kind of a lack, I don't know, I miss something, so I have a lack, and I go to God and say, please fill it up. Fill up the hole so that I don't have any more lack. So we don't go with the fullness to God so that God's fullness comes to us. See, in a religious prayer, we don't use that law, that cause determines effect. Whereas now she wants to explain to us that it's always cause that determines effect, and that we cannot reason back from effect to cause. That we can't do. Therefore, she starts right out by explaining really that what we put into prayer, we get out of prayer. That's cause and effect. Therefore, the question, what shall we put into prayer? Shall we put into prayer a lot of faith or belief or thoughts of lack or discord or what? Or shall we put into our prayer our whole sense of prayer that we have seen up to now? That we really draw from a source that is the prayer of mind, the prayer of spirit, of soul, of principle. And if that is the source of our prayer, if we draw from that well of life, then we get that back which we have put into it. Then that consciousness will determine really the results of our attitude. So right at the beginning of life as mind, which we have taken yesterday, we have seen that she actually shows that our cause, our source of prayer is by going over the first four prayers. Because she said there, in order to gain holiness, what do we have to do? We have to have the same thing as holiness, namely first as the point of view of mind, there must be a desire for holiness. Then from the tone of spirit, she says, and we must that desire above all else. And you see the firmament that says, I put first things first. Then it says that we have to be willing to sacrifice everything for it. We have to be willing to reject everything that goes against that rule of soul, and rebuke it, and therefore give up everything that is not of that nature. And then she goes on to principle and says, and we must be willing to do it. The operation of principle, the activity of that principle, we must be willing to do it. And then she says, then we then we walk securely, we come to life, then we walk securely in the only practical, not in the practical, but in the only practical road to holiness. Then we are on the way. It's giving us, I think, a very clear sense of order, that it says if we go through the preceding subject of mind, spirit, soul, principle, then that is the method. That is the method. So whenever we ask, well, what is the method? We may not use the term method. We may ask, how shall I do it? That's the same thing, to say, what is the method? It's a questioning about the ways and means of arriving at something. That's the method. So she says, well, the method is to go really through prayer. Prayer of mind, prayer of spirit, prayer of soul, prayer of principle. This is the prayer of life. If we go through that, that's the prayer of life. And so it's the only practical road to holiness. It's interesting that she says it's the only. She wants to show there are not many ways that lead to Rome. I'm fighting since 30 years to show that there is only one road to Rome, and not 1,000. Because all the others are going around the bush. And we want to have the direct road. We want to cut what the Bible always says, and it will cut a highway right through the mountains. It doesn't go around the mountains. And therefore, Mrs. Eddy shows the only method in prayer. So we can't say, no, I like to pray the way I like. Well, you can. But then that leads us then to life as spirit, that says, yes, you can do that, but you only get back what you have put into it. If you pray the way you like, you get back what you like, and not what is right, not what is divine. Because every petition, she has said, brings forth the results of one's own faith. So naturally, we can pray in 1,000 times, but the question is that the way of understanding? And so she will go on to show that to go that way of life and mind here, that is the way of understanding, of an understanding devotion of life. I think these things are great. To see, in one way, we always say, well, we are scientists, we are scientists. We always boast ourselves to be scientists. We are not just non-scientists, we are scientists. But actually, are we scientists in our whole attitude? Or do we feel there are many, many ways, I can do the way I like it, the way to Rome goes over 10,000 ways. You can also go to Rome first by the North Pole and then by the South Pole. Somewhere you can land in Rome, but it's cold there. And we get cold feet and may not go on anymore. There is a direct way to Rome. Yes. So we come when we have seen that fundamental law. How did he epitomize it? We said, wherein lies this living devotion to the divine? First in mind, it lies in a fervent, constant desire to know and do the will of God, and in a willingness to sacrifice everything for it. Well, it's a long one. Perhaps we could have put it in a shorter one. Now that we know how to epitomize it, see, that's that point. The more we know how to epitomize, how to reduce the text to few terms, naturally, the clearer it comes out, but the less it is understood by those who don't know what epitomes mean. So actually, naturally, if we would go to the core of it, we would say, all right, I can epitomize it even shorter. I just can say life and mind, and I have it. See? That's then the shortest. So you see, the art of epitomizing is always to feel how much can I reduce it that the student still can understand it, what I do. It's taking a whole text and reduce it, 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 until you have the core. The core would be life as mind, under the word as the word. But that nobody would understand. Think of it, if I had published that blue book just on 2 pages and would have just said, well, prayer is word as word, laid out in mind as mind as soul, spirit as mind, spirit as spirit, spirit as soul. They would have sent back to me and asked the money back. They would be right. So, again, sometimes these epitomes are still a bit longish, perhaps. They try to take in perhaps even too much of the garnish of it. So don't, as I said now many times, don't be irritated by it. If you feel you can put it in fewer terms, do it, as long as it gives the tone. You know that I think what I'm going to do, I will pin up on the board something from Picasso. He has shown very nicely that the way of epitomizing, just what I said. I will put it up. He had drawn a bull in a very natural way with all the horns and hairs and everything, what you can, like a photograph. And then, day after day, he gives the date to it, how day after day he reduced that bull as he had drawn it, always more and more, until finally at the end he has only a few strokes. But with those few strokes, you see at once that it is a bull. And it seems that it makes even more, gives a greater impact of what the bull is than the whole picture, the first one. I think I have it here, in case we can pin it up. Yeah, you may not see it right from afar, but somehow, see, there's 12 pictures, you see. And it starts out here on top, so. And finally, we have only this one here with a few strokes. So this is really what we do with the text. We take the big text where nothing is missing, not the hair is missing, and then we reduce it and reduce it until the structure of it just shows itself. And if we take just a bare structure of it with no details, then the structure of it makes much bigger an impact on us than the whole. I didn't want to talk about Picasso. I don't understand anything about art. That field of music and art and so on, that's way out in my consciousness. I'm sorry, but in one's life, one has to devote oneself to one thing and do that properly and not think that one can do everything properly. Yes, so we go to life as spirit, and we see right away what she wants to bring out here. She starts out, the prayer of faith shall save the sick. That's from the Bible. And the Bible is right. The Bible is true. We believe in the Bible. And swear by the Bible, but do we get always enough information from the Bible? Is the truth content always brought out or not? And here Mr. Zeddy, in a very gentle way, without really saying anything about that the Bible may not give us always the truth content, she introduces it and gives her critics to it. Because everybody would say, yes, what the Bible says is that the prayer of faith shall save the sick. So all what I have to have is faith. And I have to pray with deep faith. That's what Christians have done for the last 2,000 years. And I guess they are not so happy about the results of their prayers. And so Mrs. Eddy takes it up and says, you know, taken this statement as an isolated statement is misleading. It's absolutely misleading. Meaning is always relational, and we have to put it into the relation of the whole textbook. Or else it is misleading, because how does she go on with that prayer of faith that saves the sick? She says, what is this healing prayer? See, she asked about the truth content of that faith. Said, what do you mean by faith? Faith is just a term. It has no value by itself if we don't see it in relation to the whole teaching of Christian Science. So what is the healing prayer? And Josie depicts one of those prayers of faith and says, a mere request that God will heal the sick, that's the prayer of faith, a request that God will heal the sick, has no power to gain more of the divine presence than is always at hand. You can hear first the tone of life, the ever-presence of life, which is always there. But she says that prayer, if it is the prayer of faith, if it is a mere request that God will heal, has no effect. It can gain no more than it is already attained. The beneficial effect of such prayer. Now she says, what is the effect of it? Because she said, every petition has its effect. Now the beneficial effect of such prayer for the sick is on the human mind. How? Making it act more powerfully on the body through a blind faith in God. It's interesting, she said, yes, that blind faith in God acts on the human mind and on the body. It actually has an effect. So she says, yes, it's true. Every petitioner gets the effect of his prayer. But what is the effect? Here it is that it acts on the human mind to make it act more powerfully on the body. This, however, we must go on reading what she says. This, however, is one belief casting out another. Can you see? She says, this is not the scientific prayer. It's a prayer of metaphysics, of positive thinking perhaps, of faith, blind faith healing. This, however, is one belief casting out another. A belief in the unknown. It's not understood. Casting out the belief in sickness. So we can see that she says this is just faith healing. She does not say that any faith that is not a spiritual understanding of God has no effect. She says it has effect. It acts on the human mind and makes the body act differently, may heal him. But this is in the realm of blind faith. So that quotation from the Bible really would could be interpreted like this, that he says, the prayer of blind faith shall save the sick. That would be one rendering, because it isn't yet said what kind of faith is meant in the Bible, in James. So she said, a belief in the unknown, belief in an unknown God, casts out the belief in sickness. It's faith healing. And faith healing works. That's one thing we have to admit and to see clearly, that faith healing works. Works mostly. Works very often better, quicker than an understanding. We'll see that afterwards. So she has to correct that and say, but it is neither science nor truth that acts through blind belief. So he takes it up at the point of blind belief, says this is not blind faith when we pray in science or in truth. That's not blind faith. Nor is it the human understanding of the divine healing principle as manifested in Jesus, whose humble prayers were deep and conscientious protests of truth, of man's likeness to God and of man's unity with truth and love. We have to take that slower. I just read the whole sentence through in order to get the flow of it. So can you see the reasoning? She starts out with a sentence that lends itself to many interpretations. Namely, the Bible that says the prayer of faith shall save the sick. But it does not define alone, because it's an isolated statement, it does not define what kind of faith is meant. So she says, if under faith you understand just the blind trust or blind belief in God, then that blind belief acts on human mind and may change the body to health. But she says this blind belief is not what Jesus practiced. Therefore she said this belief is neither science, nor is this belief truth, nor is this belief, and then comes the long explanation, nor is this belief what Jesus used, namely the human understanding of the divine healing principle. See, can you see now she, in spirit, we usually get the line of demarcation that distinguishes between now here, between blind faith and understanding. She says both work. Blind faith works and understanding works. Blind faith brings back what we put into it, its belief in the unknown, and brings back something which God has not brought about. It's your belief that brings about the change in your consciousness, and that change of consciousness we know is always having an effect somehow. That's all psychology.